Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today, we're going to wrestle with a problem that is functionally invisible to most of us as we go about our daily lives, yet it is silently eating about 1% of the entire gross national product of the developed world.
It sounds like absolute hyperbole, doesn't it?
Yeah.
But when you actually start crunching the numbers on industrial wear and tear, I mean, the scale of the loss is staggering. It's essentially an invisible tax on everything we build, everything we buy, and everything we use.
I was reading through the source material for today, specifically this fascinating dissertation by Supankar Das Bakshi from the University of Cambridge. And that 1% statistic just, it floored me. And to be clear for you listening, we aren't talking about rust or corrosion here. We are talking about abrasive wear.
Right. We are talking about things rubbing against other things until they simply cease to function. It's the friction of the world grinding our machinery down to dust.
The source opens with this really visceral image to help us visualize the stakes. It describes a crusher tooth used in oil sands mining. Now, when I read tooth, I was thinking maybe the size of a fist. But these aren't small parts, are they?
No, absolutely not. These are massive, hardened steel components, think the size of a human torso. They're designed to literally chew through the earth. They are the front line in mining operations.
You picture this unstoppable force. But the source describes how, after just being exposed to the oil sands environment, which is basically sand, bitumen, rock, these teeth are worn down to what it calls a metal stump.
A stump. That's the reality of the industry.
It's completely eroded. And that image, it really sets the stakes for our mission today. We are going to dig into the material science of why that happens, but more importantly, we're looking at the quest to build the perfect steel to stop it. We are going to be comparing three microscopic gladiators inside the steel. Perlite, martensite, and a sort of underdog hero called nanostructured bainite.
And the reason this is a deep dive and not just a lecture on metallurgy is that the research in this dissertation completely flips the script on how we think about durability. It challenges the most basic assumption engineers have.
That was the massive aha moment for me. I think if I asked 10 people on the street, how do you stop a metal part from wearing out? 9 of them would instantly say, make it harder.
Harder equals better. That is the intuitive engineering assumption. If something is scratching you, be harder than the thing doing the scratching.
But this source proves that the relationship is, and I love this term, not monotonic. It's not a straight line.
No, it's not. In fact, as we'll see, sometimes the harder you make the material, the faster it fails. It's a paradox.
Okay.
So to understand why, we have to look at the microstructure. We have to shrink ourselves down and look at how the atoms are actually arranged inside the metal.
So let's introduce our three contenders. The source breaks down three specific microstructures found in steel. First up, we have perlite.
Perlite. This is a very common structure in steel. If you look at it under a microscope, it's actually quite beautiful. It looks like a fingerprint, or maybe the pages of a book viewed from the side.
I always visualize lasagna.
Lasagna works perfectly. It's what we call a lamellar structure. You have alternating layers. A layer of hard cementite, which is iron carbide sandwich, next to a layer of softer ferrite. Hard, soft, hard, soft.
So it gets its strength from that composite layering, like plywood.
Precisely. But the layers are relatively coarse. It's tough, but it's not the hardest stuff on the block. Then, moving to the other end of the spectrum, we have the tough guy, martensite.
This is the one I feel like most people have heard of, especially if they watch those knife-making videos online. You heat the steel up, and then you quench it.
Cool it instantly. You freeze the atoms in place before they can get comfortable. Martensite is incredibly hard, because the crystal structure is strained. It's full of internal tension. Visually, under a microscope, it looks like a pile of needles or chaotic laths. It's rigid, it's strong, but that internal tension comes with a price. It can be very brittle.
It's the stress case of the group.
It is. It's constantly on edge.
Okay, so perlite is the lasagna, martensite is the stressed out needle structure, and then we have the focus of this dissertation, nanostructured bainite.
This is the modern contender. Bainite is interesting because it's a mixture, but it's incredibly fine. We're talking nanoscale structure here. You have plates of bainitic ferrite, which provide the structure, but they're separated by films of something very special called retained austenite.
Retained austenite. I want to put a big mental pin in that term because the notes suggest that this specific component is essentially the secret sauce.
It is the absolute key to everything we're about to discuss. It's the magic ingredient.
Okay, so we have our three gladiators. The researchers didn't just look at them, they put them into the arena. They used a three-body abrasion test. Explain the setup, because three-body, Sounds like a physics problem.
It's actually a very standardized way to torture steel in a lab setting. It's called the dry sand rubber wheel test. You have the steel sample, that's body one. You have a rubber wheel pressing against it, body two. And then you pour sand, the abrasive in between them, that's body three.
So the wheel grinds the sand directly into the steel.
Exactly. The rubber wheel grips the sand and forces it across the surface of the metal. It mimics that oil sands crusher tooth we talked about. It's brutal.
Now, here is where the intuition just breaks down. They ran this test on our three contenders. They heat treated the steel to create different hardness levels. You would expect the martensite, the hardest one, the needle structure, to just shrug off the sand, right?
That's the expectation.
Yeah.
If hardness was the only factor, martensite should win easily and the softer perlite should be destroyed.
But the data showed basically no significant difference in the wear rate.
It's a shock to the system. You have massive variations in bulk hardness. We're talking huge differences on the Vickers hardness scale. But the amount of material lost was roughly the same.
So if I'm an engineer and I spend extra money and energy to heat treat my crusher tooth to make it rock hard martensite, I essentially wasted my budget.
In this specific low-stress abrasion environment,
yes,
you gained nothing.
Why? How can something softer last just as long as something harder?
This is where we have to look at the mechanism of failure. This is the crucial part of the study. The samples might have lost the same amount of weight, but they died in completely different ways.
Okay, walk us through the autopsy. What happened to the perlite?
Perlite, our lasagna, suffered from what the source calls severe subsurface deformation.
The layers got mashed.
They got mashed. Because the ferrite layers are soft, under the pressure of the sand, the structure just collapsed. It led to sticking.
Yeah.
Basically, the metal got smushed around and then dragged off the surface. It is too soft to hold its shape against the grind.
Okay, that makes sense. Too soft means it deforms. But martensite is hard. It shouldn't deform.
And it didn't. Martensite failed due to brittle detachment. When a hard grain of sand hit that rigid, needle-like structure, the metal couldn't flow. It couldn't absorb the energy, so it cracked.
It shattered.
On a microscopic level, yes. Tiny chunks of the surface just chipped off. This is the tragedy of being too rigid. You can't bend, so you break.
So we have one failing because it's too mushy and one failing because it's too brittle. Enter the third player, nanostructured bainite. What did it do differently?
This is where the retained austenite, that secret weapon, wakes up. Under the stress of the sand grinding against it, the bainite didn't just sit there, it reacted.
Reacted how?
The mechanical energy, the stress, and the deformation caused by the sand actually triggered a phase transformation in the steel. The retained austenite, which starts out soft and ductile, transformed into martensite.
Wait, it transformed into the hard stuff?
Yes. But, and this is critical, it only happened right on the surface, exactly where the damage was occurring.
That's incredibly cool. So as the sand is attacking it, the steel is essentially armoring itself in real time.
Exactly. It's called a TRI-IP effect transformation induced plasticity. The material absorbs the energy of the attack to fuel its own hardening. It creates a hard skin of fresh martensite to resist the wear, but the material underneath stays tough and ductile to absorb the impact.
It's like a callus forming on your hand.
That is a fantastic analogy. A callus forms only where you have friction. It protects the soft tissue underneath. With perlite and regular martensite, the heat from the friction actually made them softer. It tempered them. It weakened them. But the bainite, the stress made it stronger.
So even though the total wear was similar in that specific sand test, the bainite was doing something much smarter. It was adapting.
It was adapting. And while the wear rates were similar in the sand test, that smart behavior allows bainite to absolutely dominate when we change the arena.
Right, because sand abrasion isn't the only way things wear out. The source shifts focus to rolling sliding wear.
Think of a train wheel on a track. You have massive weight pressing down. That's the rolling part. But as the train accelerates or brakes or goes around a curve, there's also sliding. It's a crushing, shearing force.
So we aren't grinding sand into it anymore. This is metal on metal combat.
Correct. And in this twin disc test, nanostructured bainite outperformed commercial alloys of equivalent hardness by a significant margin.
Why does the lasagna perlite struggle here? I'd imagine sliding layers would be good.
You'd think, but it depends on the direction. Imagine that stack of paper again. If you push down on it and slide parallel to the pages, they slide apart easily. In perlite, under high loads, the structure physically deforms until the layers align with the sliding direction.
And once they align,
they peel off. It's called delamination. At low loads, perlite is fine. But at high loads, the plastic deformation is too extreme. the structure essentially organizes itself to fail.
Okay, so why does bainite win the gold medal here?
Two main reasons. First, the structure itself. The bainitic ferrite is what we call nanostructured. It has an incredibly high dislocation density.
Dislocation density, we need to decode that for the listeners.
Right. Think of a metal crystal like a perfectly organized marching band. If you want to bend or deform metal, you have to move the band members out of line. A dislocation is a glitch in the lineup.
Okay, a glitch.
Usually glitches allow the metal to move. But if you have too many glitches, if the marching band is just a chaotic mosh pit, nobody can move. The dislocations get tangled up. Nanostructured bainite is like a dense, tangled forest. It's packed with so many internal obstacles that the material simply refuses to deform deeply.
So it's structurally stubborn.
Extremely. But the second reason is our hero again, retained austenite. In rolling sliding wear, that surface transformation happens again.
The armor trick.
Yes. The source describes the formation of a friction layer. It's an incredibly thin layer of extremely fine grains right at the surface. It acts like a lubricating shield.
So it's not just resisting the wear, it's changing the surface properties to minimize the damage.
Exactly. It's a coating that the material generates itself from the inside out.
This leads us to a really important section of the deep dive, the physics of the grind. Because one thing the dissertation stresses is that wear isn't just a property of the steel. You can't just buy wear-resistant steel and expect it to work everywhere.
Right. Wear is a system. It involves the abrasive, the steel, the pressure, the environment, all of it.
One of the variables that shocked me was the size effect. We assume big rocks hurt more than small sand, obviously, but the scale of the damage increase is wild.
It's completely nonlinear. The source notes that going from a grit size of 15 micrometers to 150 micrometers.
Which is still tiny. That's like dust versus fine sand.
Right. But that small increase in size caused the wear rate to jump 50 times.
50 times? That seems so disproportionate.
It does, but it makes sense when you look at the mechanics. It changes the mechanism entirely. Fine dust might just polish the surface, but once the particle gets big enough, it stops scratching and starts gouging. It's the difference between sandpaper and a chisel.
And then there's temperature. We briefly touched on this with the transformation, but just how hot does it get down there in the microscopic contact zone?
Locally. It can flash up to 1,000 degrees Celsius.
That is hot enough to heat treat steel.
That's exactly the problem. Friction generates heat. If you take a standard hard steel, that heat acts like a tempering cycle. It softens the steel. So right when you need the hardness the most when you're under attack, the heat of the battle is dismantling your defenses.
Which just reinforces why that nanostructured bainite is so special. It seems to resist that thermal softening better.
It does. And in fact, the heat helps drive that austenite transformation we like so much. It thrives on the energy that destroys other materials.
The source also categorizes the damage into three types: microcutting, microplowing, and microfracture. These sound like farm terms.
They describe the movement of the abrasive.
Mm-hmm.
Microcutting is exactly what it sounds like. The grit acts like a knife, slicing a groove and removing metal. That usually happens in softer, ductile materials.
Microplow.
Like a snow plow pushing snow to the side of the road. The grit pushes the metal aside. It creates ridges on the side of the groove. The metal isn't removed immediately, but those ridges become weak and eventually break off.
And microfracture is that brittle failure we saw on the Martin site.
Correct. The surface just cracks and spalls away. That's the worst case scenario for hard materials.
So bringing this all back to the real world, why should you, listening at home, who maybe doesn't run an oil sands mine, care about austenite turning into martensite? What is the practical upshot of this material?
It's about efficiency, safety, and longevity of our infrastructure. If we can build rails, mining chutes, or even heavy earth-moving equipment out of nanostructured bainite, we are creating machines that are smart.
Smart in what way? Because it doesn't have a computer chip in it.
Smart in that they react to their environment locally. Think about a rail line. Most of the time, on the straightaways, it just needs to be tough. It needs to support the weight and not crack under vibration. Bainite is tough. But then comes the curve. Right. On a curve, the wheels are screeching, sliding, grinding. The rail needs to be incredibly hard to resist that abrasion. Nanostructured bainite becomes hard only on that curve, only on the surface where the wheel touches.
It optimizes itself. It's bespoke hardness on demand.
It is. The source compares it to commercial grades like Hardox or Crusabro. Those are excellent steels, standard in the industry, but they usually force you to compromise. You pick high hardness or high toughness. This nanostructure lets you have both.
I want to circle back to one failure analysis in the source to drive this home. The crusher tooth from the intro, the one that became a stump. The source mentioned it had a hard-facing layer. That sounds like a good thing. Why did it fail?
A hard-facing layer is basically where you weld a super hard material onto the surface of a cheaper metal. It's an exoskeleton, a shell. But based on everything we've learned, that shell was likely too brittle.
It was the martensite problem.
Exactly. When you hit a brittle shell with the massive impact of mining rocks, it can't handle the shock, it cracks and flakes off. And once that shell is gone,
the soft metal underneath is just eaten alive.
Whereas with the bainite, there is no shell to flake off. The protection is intrinsic to the material. It goes all the way through. As you wear down the top layer, the next layer transforms and becomes the new hard layer.
This is such a cool shift in perspective for me. We usually think of metal as this dead, static thing. You forge it, it cools, it's done. But this research suggests the best materials are dynamic.
That is the key takeaway for me. Wear isn't just about resisting scratches, it's a dynamic interplay. You can't just fight nature with brute force hardness. The tough guy approach fails because it's inflexible.
So the real holy grail of material science isn't finding the hardest rock, it's nanostructure.
It's architecture. It's controlling the arrangement of the metal at the atomic level to allow it to adapt under stress.
It's almost biological. It feels like we're talking about bone strengthening under load or something.
It really does. And it raises a provocative thought for the future. The source suggests that the best materials are almost alive in how they react. If we can master this at the nano level, creating metals that change their crystal structure when attacked, what else could we build?
Right. Could we build suspension bridges that get stronger the more traffic goes over them?
Or earthquake-resistant buildings where the joints harden only when the shaking starts, but stay flexible otherwise to absorb wind? We are moving away from static materials to responsive ones.
It completely changes the way you look at the world.
It certainly does.
Well, I will certainly never look at a rusty, screeching train track the same way again. It's not just noise, it's a molecular battlefield down there.
It is a very active place. And hopefully, with materials like nanostructured bainite, we can keep things running a little bit longer and save that 1% of the GMP.
Fascinating stuff. Thank you so much for walking us through the microscopic details today.
My pleasure. It was fun to dig in.
And thank you for listening. Next time you hear a machine grinding away, just remember, there might be some retained austenite down there, fighting for its life to protect the whole system. See you next time on The Deep Dive.